Okay. So we're here tonight to talk about the realization and the fourth column of our inventory. Before we do anything, I'd start us off with a prayer. Just want to thank you, Lord, for bringing us together tonight and giving us the courage to face this painful inventory process, to dig a little bit deeper, to see the areas of self that have been blocking us. We ask you tonight to just enable us to face and be rid of the things inside of us that are blocking us from a relationship with you and a relationship with others and a relationship with ourselves. Give us the strength and the willingness to remain in these steps, in this work, and to rely upon you to carry this attitude of our third step into the remainder of our steps and into our everyday lives. In your name we pray. Amen. All right. So we left off last week. We talked about the first, second, and third columns. We talked about the who, talked about the why, who we were angry at, why we were angry at them. And then we talked about the seven areas of self. The seven areas of self are attitudes and ideas behind our resentments. It was very important, I'll reiterate, validating our pain. Okay, remember we talked about not dismissing any of this. Our ultimate goal is to release this. As we walk through these steps, we're releasing this pain, this attitude of judgment and superiority over others that has been blocking us from God's will for us. But ultimately, in the beginning here, we need to recognize it. We need to validate it because it's real and it hurts. And that's what we're doing in these first three columns as we put on paper who we're angry with and why we're angry with them. The justification to that attitude that we put in our third column. We also talked about principles that may come up, old ideas in our lives that have been guiding us. My example was that a real man never asks for help, right? Because help is asking for help is admitting weakness, right? That's been one of my principles. I shared with you last week in inventory, first three columns with my father and also on a principal. And tonight at the end of the meeting, I'll pull up that inventory that I had on my dad and I'll revisit the first three columns briefly, and then we'll look at what we're going to talk about tonight. We're going over the pages and the guidance and direction prior to you guys writing, because I think it helps a little bit more to have a discussion about tonight, the realization in the fourth column. And then you guys take that to pen and paper throughout the week. Bring that to your homework group. Okay. Validating our pain, recognizing, not dismissing, is what we did last week. And tonight we're going to look at the realization first. So on page 66, it says we turn back to the list for it held the key to the future. We were prepared to look at it from an entirely different angle. So all those areas of pride, self-esteem, and ambition, security, sex relations, personal relations, pocketbook that I put on paper that justified this resentment that I'm hanging on to. Remember, a resentment in my life is me giving you the power over my life. That's what I'm doing, right? And our third step decision talked about giving God power over our lives. That's kind of what we're walking towards here. So if I'm looking at it from an entirely different angle, that would mean that I need to set aside everything I think I know. soon as I get to the bottom of my third column and I flip these pages and I begin writing on this second sheet, I got to set aside everything I think I know. I have to look at this from a completely different angle. Why would I want to do that? Because I don't have the power to release this pain. I don't have the power to forgive these people. I don't have the power to accept these people. My ego, my pride, and myself completely stop me from having compassion, understanding, finding a way to recognize patience and tolerance and kindliness and love in my life. So I'm forced to look at this from a different perspective. And one of the ways we're going to do that is through a realization. What is a realization? I'm realizing something in my life. Something is coming to light that I haven't seen before, that I haven't really contemplated or considered. So the first thing I'm going to see when I look at this first sheet and this resentment from a different angle is I'm going to begin to see that the world and its people really dominated me. The world and its people have dominated me. Remember, right? A resentment that I'm hanging on to is basically permission for you to run my life, to dictate my emotions, how I'm going to feel, different points of the day, how I'm going to react, the attitude I'm going to carry around. So instead of going to God and asking for guidance and direction, going to prayer and meditation, I'm hanging on to these resentments, these ideas of judgment, superiority in my life, and they're driving me, right? These things have to be replaced. So in the state of living where the world and its people are dominating me, the wrongdoings of others, fancied or real, had power to actually kill. Fancied or real. So as we look at these, again, it's not to dismiss. But there will be things in your inventory that are going to come up that you are going to get to the end of the fourth column and poof, it's going to be gone. It's going to disappear and you're going to recognize, oh, that wasn't even really a big deal. Once I put that on paper, it's gone, right? Those are the fancied resentments. Those are the things that we think have harmed us. There's going to be some particular resentments that we're going to get to the end of our fourth column. And we're going to say, man, I didn't get much relief there. I see some truth. This still hurts. Those are the real ones. Those are the real ones. Those are the ones we do not have the power to be free of. This is where we have to recognize. I was thinking about something the other night. I was thinking about this third column. I was thinking about, I heard in a meeting, they were talking about God is either everything or God is nothing, right? We put that on paper. I talked to you guys about the fundamental idea of God being inside of all of us when we put God is everything on paper, right? It's right there. We already have it. That third column of our resentment inventory is a perfect example of God being nothing in our life. That's what it is. So remember that when you go back and you're reviewing your third columns that you wrote this past week, that's God being nothing in your life. It's something to really take a look at and understand, I need this power and I don't have it. And the healing behind these resentments is going to come from God becoming everything in these situations. Remember, we don't overthink that. We don't beat ourselves up. We're not setting ourselves up for failure. This is an attitude. This is an idea. And this is an action of reliance. Basically understanding, I don't have the power to do this, right? So the wrongdoings of others, fancied or real, they actually have the power to kill us. Resentments are the number one offender, right? We talked about that. Manifestations of self coming in the form of dishonesty and selfishness and fear and self-centeredness, right? Going to kill us. Because what it's going to do, it's going to drive us back to drink. Or some of us are so proud and been sober so long that there's no way we're going to pick up a drink, but we surely might contemplate the ultimate sacrifice. We might contemplate just leaving this world because this pain is just too much. So either way, these resentments, these wrongdoings of others, whether they're fancied or real, they have the power to actually kill us. How can we escape? Well, we're in that process right now. We've mustered up the courage to come and be a part of this workshop, to share our innermost pain and suffering with other people, to dig deep and to be honest. We made this decision to turn our will and our lives over to the care of God, and we're recognizing that this step process is the essence of that for us today. Today, the essence of our third step decision is continuing with this inventory. That's where we're at, and that's where we stay. And as you sit down and balk at this or put this off or wonder, what am I really doing? Ask yourself the question, did I contemplate carefully about this decision I was going to make? What does it mean to me? Because if we simplify it, the best of our ability, what it means to us today to turn our will and our lives over to the care of God as we understand Him is to do this inventory, to show up here, to show up at the group, and to put pen to paper. And we can keep it that simple. So we saw that these resentments must be mastered, but how? See, I can't wish them away any more than alcohol. Remember, I couldn't, on my own power, lost the power of choice. I suffered from this mental obsession that allowed me to go back to the thing that was destroying my life time and time again against my own will. Right? I couldn't think them away. I couldn't wish it away. I couldn't come up with the solution. The same is true with these resentments. We can push them down deep, but they will resurface. We can pretend they don't exist, but they just might kill us. So this is the course that we're going to take. Okay. We did our third column. We wrote the who, we wrote the why, and we talked about the seven areas of ourselves that justify how we're feeling and why we're feeling that way. And that, if that page is done properly, that gets a little ugly. It's a little nasty, right? Like me talking about how a real man doesn't need a father, a loving father, doesn't need help from anybody, doesn't need any of you or your love, right? I mean, how ugly and nasty is that? It's a very scary place to live and to carry that idea and attitude through life. So this is going to be our course. The first thing we're going to do is we are going to realize that these people who wronged us were perhaps spiritually sick. Though we did not like their symptoms, which is our second column, and the way they disturbed us, which is our third column, they, like ourselves, were sick too. So hold on a minute, wait. So you're telling me that this person that I'm so burned up, I'm sore at, I'm angry at, is just as sick, if not more sick than me, spiritually broken. And I'm sitting here looking at all the ways that I've lashed out at these people. I'm looking at my third column and the ridiculous ideas I'm carrying around in my life when no God exists. And you're telling me that these people are suffering in the same way? Yeah. That's what they're telling me. Okay, hold on. So you want me to have some compassion for these people that harm me? Yeah. That's what they're telling us. Why would I do that? Because they're just like me. Right? So let's remove the alcohol and the drugs for a minute. Okay, so what? What do we say was the third phase of our first step problem? Spiritual malady. So hold on a minute. You're telling me that these people that have harmed me and wrecked my life and didn't give me the love I deserve and treated me like the redheaded stepchild when I was actually your child, have a spiritual malady? Yes. It's exactly what they're telling me. Why else would they treat anybody like this? Why else would they lash out? Sometimes we think, you know, here's a way for me to falsely release resentment, let's say, against my mother. Ah, well, she did the best she could. Right? Oh man, that's just me saying, okay, I'm going to release this on my own power. Okay, the truth is she did the best she knew how, and I don't know where she came from, and I don't know what her childhood was like except for what she shared with me. I don't know the internal pain that she's suffering from. I don't know how much she craves this love and connection that she never received in her life. Therefore, I'm perceiving that she didn't give it to me the way I deserve, right? See how once I start to perceive this person as myself, I begin to have compassion. We talked about the little child inside and giving them a hug, right? And having some compassion for this pain, for ourselves, validating our own pain. We're doing the same thing with these other people. We're understanding that they are suffering as well. Okay. How are we going to do that? See, I can talk about it all I want, but there's going to be an action of some pen to paper that's really going to show me, right? It's going to show me. We have a prayer here for our fourth step. And it says, we're going to ask God to help us to show the same tolerance, pity, and patience that we would cheerfully grant a sick friend. That's how you want me to treat these people that harm me? Are you kidding me? Didn't you see what I just put on paper? What they did or didn't do? Yes, that's the direction. Well, how can I do that? Well, what does it say for me to do first? We ask God. Why? Because we can't do it on our own. We can pretend. That's a dangerous place because it will come back up and resurface. So I'm going to have to ask God, God, please help me to show the same tolerance and pity and patience for Dad that I would for Travis, one of my best friends, right? Just like that. How are you going to do that? I can't. That's how. I'm going to acknowledge that I can't. And I've turned my will, my life over to this care, this power, and I'm going to rely on it. For the first time in my life, I'm going to say, I need help. See, you helped me to be free of alcohol and drugs. As a matter of fact, I didn't even think about drinking or getting high today. Holy moly. It's a miracle, right? So you just proved to me that you have the power to change my life when I'm desperate enough. Am I desperate enough in this inventory process? Am I desperate enough to find out what's fancy and what's real? Am I desperate enough to understand that this stuff will resurface and kill me and probably take me back to a drink? I'll get so fed up. Or worse, could take me to something I might be too prideful to pick up. That's when it really gets ugly. That's when bad things happen to people. They make decisions that they cannot come back from. That kind of stuff happens too. It's scary, right? Behind guilt and shame and regret, right? So when a person offends me, I'm going to say to myself, this is a sick man. How can I be helpful to him? God, save me from being angry. Thy will be done. Okay, that's our four-step prayer. God, help me to show this particular person the same tolerance, pity, and patience that I would cheerfully grant a sick friend. God, remind me that this is a sick man or woman. How can I be helpful to them? Right here, right now. In the midst of this anger, God, save me from being angry because it is blocking me right now from you and your power and any type of connection or desire to have any kind of relationship with you because I'm so angry. Thy will be done. That means I don't have expectations, but I'm honestly surrendering the situation in the moment to you. Right? I'm lifting it up to you. That's all I'm going to do. That's going to help me. We're going to avoid retaliation or argument. Why? Because anger is not an emotion, and our fear is just screaming out of us when we're getting in this retaliating, combative, argumentative interaction with somebody. Right? We lose all ability to reason for compassion. It's impossible. Why? Because I'm right. That's why. Because I know what's best for you. That's why. Right? Because now I have the power. I have the power to answer all the problems, and I surely know how to fix this situation or circumstance. And it usually goes like, if you would just do and behave like I'm saying and agree with me, then there wouldn't be a problem. Can't you see that? Right? See, that's my attitude. That's what I'm bringing to the table with my own power. It's ugly. And I have all kinds of ways of masking it and hiding it. So I have to walk it back. I have to ask God for help. Right? How come we're going to avoid retaliation argument? Because we wouldn't treat a sick person that way. That's what we said. We just asked God to help us to treat these people like we would a sick friend. Right? Give them the same patience and pity and tolerance. Right? If we do, we're going to destroy our chance of being helpful. We cannot be helpful to all people, but at least God will show us how to take a kindly and tolerant view of everyone. So that's the concept behind this realization after our third column. Now, what is this realization going to look like for us? We have a cause. We have an action for a particular person or an institution. Principle is not going to have a realization. So if you're doing an inventory on a principle, you're not going to have a realization for it because it just doesn't fit. But the truth is, the realization is a place where I'm going to pause. I've written my third column. I see life with no God. I see justification. I see a lot of pain, but I see the way I'm hiding it and masking it. I see how, remember we talked about the seven areas of self. They're not bad things. We just have them in collision with each other. Our instincts are completely in collision. That's what's happening. We need to get them in line. We need to allow God to become everything in those particular situations, right? So I am going to look for a time or a place in my life that I have done something similar or exactly the same. Best case to this particular person, if you cannot find that, if you look hard enough, to any person, any time in your life. Have I acted out in this way to anybody around me ever? The more specific we can get, the better, right? Some of these are going to be very difficult. Some of these I won't have the answer to. You won't have the answer to. Maybe when you do your fifth step, you may come up with some guidance. I believe in the power of God, and if he's invited in to that process, you will be shown some truth. This is also a place in the inventory to stop and to say a prayer. God, please enable me to face and be rid of the things inside of me that are blocking me, because I can't see it right now. I can't see how I haven't treated, how I treated my children the way that my father treated me. I can't see how I treated my wife the way that this ex-girlfriend treated me, or whatever it may be. You see, the reason why we want to come up with this is because I can talk to you guys and explain it, and you can read it, and we can understand the morals behind it, the ideas behind it. But until I'm specific about it, something that I've done in my life, I'm still better than you. I'm just better than you. Remember, we talked about some of us getting this place of, I got to be worthy of this power of God. And then we had this discussion on how none of us are worthy. So in my inventory, and that's what God wants. He wants me to step back and admit, I'm not worthy. I'm not worthy of you or your power. Please help me. See, I'm in this place of desperation here. I need some guidance. I need some direction. And it levels the playing field for all of us. God doesn't love any of us more than anybody else. So this realization helps me to see, as I'm writing my resentment, I'm way more worthy in life than you are. I'm a way better person than you are. I would never act or do this to anybody. Wow, I see it. I've done that. I treated you like that. Oh my gosh, I did that, right? You know, I was writing an inventory on my oldest son, right? My adopted son. And it was all about the level of disrespect. He was in a really bad place, sending me horrible texts, calling me horrible names, cussing at me. Just unacceptable treatment from a father to a son, right? Unacceptable. And I looked and I looked and I looked and I got to the realization part and I said, and he was also doing the same thing to his mother at the time, right? He was lashing out at the family, man. This was, I don't know, a couple of years ago, maybe less. And it was ugly. And thank God for the program, because the old me, I would have never talked to him again. I would have cut him off. That would have been it. You've been done. You're not welcome in my home. Don't ever ask me for anything. You don't treat me like that. I don't care what I've done. Don't you see who I am? Don't you know who I am? And so he treated his mom pretty badly a couple times, and it really got to me, right? It really, really got to me. I could handle him going off on me, but he's talking to mom, saying some horrible things. And I didn't know what to do. I was ready to write him in the middle of being sober and being in a program. I'm like, here's what some people say. Gotta have boundaries, right? Hey man, if God had boundaries, would we all even be sober today? Think about it. If God had requirements, would I even have a chance? Come on. You all know the stuff goes on in your head. If God knows that stuff that nobody else knows, would we be qualified? No, that's why we're all not worthy. So I get to this realization portion. I can't see it. I can't. I never talked to my mother like that ever in my life. I had some words with my old man, but man, I would never have done that to my mom. This is where the guidance and the help of a step guide or a sponsor really comes in. Sat down with the man and he said, you know what, Jason? How have you treated your wife? What did it look like 15 years ago? And I said, holy shit. Holy shit, man. Yeah, you ever scream and yell at your wife? You ever call your wife names? Huh? Did you emotionally abuse your wife? Right? Did you play the victim and blame her for every problem you ever had? Were you raising your son at the time? Was he in the house at the time? Did he see that and witness that? Holy shit. See, the essence of a realization brought a tear to my eye. I put that on paper. He witnessed me treat his mother the same or worse than I am carrying around this resentment at him doing for her right now. I did it. I created that. Right? I'm not to blame for it. See, this isn't about blame. This is about me recognizing that I am no better. This is about me recognizing that this particular person is just as spiritually sick as me. That gives me the ability to release, not dismiss. Oh, that doesn't mean I say, oh, his behavior is okay, right? Now, sometimes as we move forward, I have the power to go and share that with him, right? Through an immense process, through growth, through allowing him to recognize what I'm realizing about myself, right? And let him know, like, hey, man, I'm carrying this around about you, the way you've been treating mom, but check it out. I understand that that's all you saw from me for many, many years, right? And his first reaction was like, yeah, see, that's why. And I get it. And I say, okay, but understand this, son. I don't do that anymore. Okay, number one, I'm acknowledging why I'm no better than you. But moving forward, if you continue this behavior, there's got to be some level of boundaries here, right? You see, so that's okay. But ultimately, it was important for me to recognize that I'm no better. And that was hard, man. The stuff he was saying, I was livid. It's amazing when you have a child and they're going off on you, but as soon as they turn to the spouse and start doing that, man, your attitude changes real quick. You're like, well, wait a minute. You don't get to talk to mama like that. That ain't right. Right? So that's an example of a realization. And what we're trying to gain here too is a little bit of relief in this process. This next sheet's going to start to give us a little bit of relief. Remember, you're really going to see some fancied ones that you're going to let go of pretty quickly. But you're going to see some real ones that hurt. But we're looking for a little bit of relief. We're trying to tone it down a bit to understand that not me nor this person is worthy of the power of God. We'll talk about later on in the steps how they couldn't have done any better without this power of God anyway, right? Remember, nobody does the best they can. We're all doing the best we know how. We're all doing the best we were taught, right? And we're all trying to better ourselves, especially people like us that are seeking out help. Those are the ones that are really trying to better themselves. So the top of the second sheet on the realization is a place where we're going to be as specific as we can. And if we get stuck, we're going to step back and we're going to ask for some help. We're going to ask for help from God. You can ask help from sponsor, step guide. I've offered my time to you guys if you need it. I think the hardest part in all that is kind of being willing to get honest and to take the time to kind of open up to someone, right? Especially a stranger. But what I found is that's a little easier if you think about it. I find it harder to like really get open and honest with people that like really know me or that I'm close to, you know, like really close, especially people I live with or have known me my whole life. Like, oh, That's tough. Find a lot easier to call one of you guys and just pour my heart out. Because you're not affected. Think about that. You guys call me and talk. I'm not affected by whatever's coming out of your mouth. I'm trying to be healed too, and it's a wonderful process. So that's our realization and kind of the idea behind it. And what we're going to do this week at the top of the second sheet, we'll put our realization there. Okay. How we've done something similar or the same to somebody or even better to this particular person, especially if it's that person, then it really takes the sting out of it. Then it allows me to begin to show them the same tolerance, pity, and patience that I would cheerfully grant a sick friend, right? So now we're going to go down to the fourth column, which is on the same sheet, right? And remember that our selfishness, our dishonesty, our fear, and our self-seeking or self-centeredness were the ultimate manifestations of self. So now we're going to look at this list from a whole nother perspective once again. So it says, referring to our list again, putting out of our minds the wrongs that others had done. How is it possible for me to put out of my minds this wrong? Well, for a moment, look at the realization that you put on paper. Allow that short moment to give you some space and some freedom to try and put out of your mind what they've done. Sometimes that realization hurts. It does, because now I'm seeing some truth about myself. But I also get this ability to just get enough compassion, because now I'm about to write my fault in the whole thing. What were my actions? What was my thinking? What was my delusion? And what was the fear behind it? Right? And what harm did I really cause? So I'm going to refer to the list again. I'm going to put out of my mind the wrongs that others had done. We resolutely look for our own mistakes. So now I'm completely disregarding the pain. Again, I'm not dismissing it. I haven't released it yet. I'm going to disregard it for a moment. Realization helped me do that a little bit. I'm going to look at where I had been selfish, dishonest, self-seeking, or frightened. Right? That's what I'm going to look at. Each one on their own. And though a situation had not been entirely my fault, I'm going to try my best to disregard the other person involved entirely. Okay, disregard them. Where was I at fault? What did I do here? How did I act out behind these manifestations of self? And what I begin to see is the harm that I've caused to these people. See, I begin by saying, I'm mad at you. This is why you hurt me. My pain is validated. It's real. I put it on paper. I'm going to justify it. And then hold on. I gotta come up where I did the same or similar thing to somebody or to you. Okay. Then I'm going to disregard what you did. And then I'm going to look at the harm I caused you. See, we're even in the play. We're all equal here is what we're trying to get to this place to understand. Some of these can be very difficult. Abuse, for instance, is difficult, but there are ways. So where was I to blame, right? Where had I been selfish in this whole situation? What was my selfish actions? It's the first thing we're going to put on paper. What did I do to you because of this idea that I was carrying around that I'm better than you and that you hurt me so bad and that I'm going to get even with you and I'm going to show you, I'm going to prove to you, right? What have I done? Where was I dishonest? what's the delusion I've been living in, the lie that I've been living that's kind of driving this whole attitude and these actions. Where was I self-seeking in all of it? And most important, what was the fear attached? Where was I frightened? We're going to start to learn that that is the exact nature of all of our wrongs, all of our character defects. It's all driven by fear. So if that's the case, what do I have ultimately to lift up to the Lord? What's objectionable in my life? All the fear. That's what it is. Right? Because if I'm afraid, there is no God in my life. And self-reliance is going to fail me. Right? It fails me every time. That's what we'll talk about next week. So though the situation not been entirely our fault, we tried to disregard the other person involved entirely. Where was I to blame? The inventory was ours, not the other man's. When we saw our faults, we listed them. How am I going to see them? Well, I'm going to step back and take a breath. I'm going to be as honest as I can. I'm going to ask God to please help me to be free of the things inside of me. Help me to face them and be rid of all of this stuff that's blocking me from a relationship with you and with myself and with this person. So we're going to place them before us in black and white. We're going to admit our wrongs honestly. And all of a sudden, I'm becoming willing to set these matters straight. What does setting these matters straight look like? You see, we're putting on paper all of these things that we're going to be taking into our amends process as we get a little further. Can't do that until I release this stuff, though. Right, I can't do an honest and thorough and fearless inventory without getting to this place of some sort of relief and release. And that happens while we do this. Why we admit to God, to ourselves, and to another human being these exact nature of our wrongs. Somebody help me to see all this objectionable stuff. Somebody that's not affected by it, that took the time to sit with me, to open their heart, to invite God in. Maybe hear something I'm not saying or see something that I didn't put down on paper or help me get to this place that I can't seem to get to on my own. Okay. We're going to be willing to set these matters straight. So that's what our realization and our fourth column is going to look like. See, the pages in the big book, when it comes to this inventory, there's not a whole lot about it. You know, a lot of people all just follow the directions. Come on, man. Like, we need God. We need practice. We need another person. We need to be willing. We have to set aside everything we think we know. We have to come to this understanding that these people are spiritually sick as well. We got to get to a place of willingness to set right these wrongs, to make this stuff straight, right? We're acknowledging that this is killing us and hurting us, and we're not comfortable in our own skin, and we're carrying around all this pain, and we don't know how to deal with it. So this is going to take work. If this is the first time you've done the inventory, well, God bless you, and you're right here. If this is the first, second, third, fourth, fifth time, dig a little bit deeper. Ask yourself the question of, do I want to see some more truth? What does it really look like? Why is this same resentment keep coming up? Why is this one always on my sheet every time I come around, right? What's going on here? What am I hanging on to that I'm not willing to see? There's still stuff with my mom. I don't see it. It's just going to take continued work. Continued work. Tried to get to a place of understanding, compassion, knowing that the relationship needs to grow, and finding myself at times not really willing to do that. And I can justify it by boundaries and bunch of baloney. But the truth is, I just can't find it in. I have to recognize I don't have the power to come with the compassion and the love and the kindness and the tolerance that it takes to love other people the way God loves me, right? That's a command that God has given us. All I want you to do, I want you to love these other people the way that I love you. And that's one way for us to kind of perceive this and think about this process. Do I have the ability to love other people the way that God loves me? Is that my goal? Is that what I'm looking to do here? So this week we're going to write the fourth column. Before we do that, we're going to write the realization. Okay. We've already transcribed through page 71, so we don't have to worry about that this week or the next few weeks. That's the reason why we did that, so we can focus on this inventory. Okay. So I'm going to go back to this screen here, which is the inventory on my dad. And I'm going to see if I can run through it a little bit. And we'll get to the next page. We went over this last week. So this is an inventory for my father, who passed in 2024. He was an alcoholic. He was an addict. We talked about a target, possible target for these inventory sheets. I had these ideas that, okay, my dad was never there for me. He wasn't the father I deserved. He abandoned my kids. Didn't give me the love I deserved. And the target I came up with was that he chose drugs and alcohol over me. Sometimes you're going to have a 1A, B, C, D for parents, for spouses, for friends, for whatever. Don't force a target, but if you can see it, it'll minimize the sheets that you need to write. Because what we're going to find is that the ideas and the attitudes and the emotions behind all of this that we're looking to change with a whole new set of conceptions and motives are the same. They're very similar. Throughout our inventory process, the fears are similar. The sex inventory with these different relationships are very similar. Our motives are similar. That's what we're looking for. These objectionable things that we're going to lift up to God because we don't have the power. So my cause was that he chose drugs and alcohol over me. Okay. The self-esteem is, remember, we look at all seven areas of self here, not just the example in the book shows us, you know, what we feel was affected. It's all affected. So we're going to talk about all of it. So self-esteem is going to be how I see or feel about myself. So I'm the best son that anyone could want. I deserve a father there for me when I need him. Okay. The pride is how I think that others see or feel about me. And remember, there's fears attached to all of these. So if I'm the best son that anyone could want, I deserve a father that's there for me when I need him. What's the fear behind that? You know, there's the fear of not being good enough. There's a fear of being abandoned, right? We're going to watch these fears kind of repeat themselves. Then there's the pride area of self, how I think others see me or feel about me, right? Nobody should waste an opportunity to be a loving and caring father because of drugs and alcohol. Nobody should do that. That's ridiculous. Well, hold on a minute. I've just spent 3 months talking about my disease and the madness and insanity in my life. See, I'm already starting to see it. And the fear behind that is I'm going to be unimportant. And we go to ambition, what I want outside of the situation, this resentment I'm carrying against my dad that who chose drugs and alcohol over me. I want a perfect father-son relationship where I can go to him for help. I can go to him for advice and love and understanding. And I want you to be there for me when I need you. See, when we come to the ambition part of the third column, it's going to be real. That's what we really want. That's coming from the heart. The ambition is not going to be an ugly one for us. It's going to be, hey, this is me in a perfect world here. This is when God's really showing up. It's just not happening. And what's the fear behind that? I'm going to be alone. That's my fear. I don't want to be alone, man. And then the security portion of this third calm is asking me, what do I need inside, internally? I need to be loved. I need to be comforted. I need to feel safe. I need to know that my dad has got my back to be okay. And there's that fear of abandonment again, and not being good enough. And then the personal relations. This is my deep-seated belief on how relationships are supposed to look. Right? A real father is always going to be there for his kids. He would never abandon or neglect his child for any reason. They would be the most important thing in his life. See, all these ideas in my life, remember, here I'm not even taking into consideration my dad's a sick man, my dad's a drug addict and alcoholic, maybe my dad with a hard life. Oh, his dad died and his wife left him within a week when he was only 22 years old. Oh, I'm not considering that, right? He started taking pills when he was 9 years old. I'm not considering that. You know, he's the youngest of five children by, I think, 15 years closest to the next sibling. Like, I'm not considering any of that, right? His mom was super religious. He could never live up to that. I'm just saying what I believe would be perfect father. And my fear behind that is I'm going to be neglected. I'm going to be alone. I'm going to be abandoned. So I've got alone repeating itself. I've got abandoned repeating itself. Not good enough repeating itself. And then the sex relation we talked about last week. I'm going over this column again because I believe it's important. The third column is very, very important for us to get super honest and to see things that we don't really see. The sex relation says that a real man doesn't need anything from anybody, especially a loving father who is always around. A real man can fend for himself. You see how it just flipped? It got ugly. The sex relations is what I'm kind of recognizing my own weakness here. Why am I bitching and moaning about this, right? What would a real man do? A real man wouldn't need any of this. And out pops a principle in my life, failure and weakness. And then I have the pocketbook, and we write this if it's affecting our finances. Some people write about if it's affecting their time. I recommend just look at your finances, and if you can't find anything, you don't necessarily have to write anything here. But mine says no one should have their son pay for the rehab or make their son take money from their family. And there's a fear of being taken advantage of and a fear of being abused. Okay. So we talked about that last week. I didn't put it on the record, and I felt I needed to get it on the recorder for people that listen to this in the future. Now I'm at the realization all of a sudden. So hold on a minute. How am I going to pause and how am I going to act and see that? Do I really realize that this person that has harmed me, my father, I looked to him for all this love, everything I wanted wasn't there, that he's perhaps spiritually sick as I am? Can I pause for a minute and ask God to grant me the same patience, pity, and tolerance that I would for a sick friend? Can I ask God to save me from being angry in this moment? How can I be helpful to my dad? How can I be helpful to this particular person that's on this sheet? What can I do for them? I cannot do that on my own power. This is a time to pause. This is a time to reflect. What have I done? Well, I've chosen drugs and alcohol over a relationship with my own children. Drugs and alcohol have been the most important thing in my life for their entire childhood. Right? Do as I say, not as I do. I remember having my son in inpatient rehabilitation, and we all sat in this circle and we were making amends. And I asked him the answer to asking for forgiveness. This was treatment center style of recovery, was yes, I forgive you, or I'm not ready to forgive you right now. And I asked my son to forgive me for all the time I spent in the garage hitting the bong while he was growing up. That's where I kept it. He broke into tears and he looked me in the eyes and he said, "Dad, I'm not ready to forgive you for that right now." Right? And that was years ago, well before recovery, well before I even recognized or acknowledged that I had a problem. And I got stuck at this realization. What did I do? I abandoned my children. I neglected both of my children. I chose alcohol and drugs over them the whole time. All they saw growing up was partying. Everything we did involved beer and weed and the other drugs they didn't really see, but they weren't stupid. And everybody we knew, that's all we did. So my realization here is to understand that I did the exact same thing my father did. I neglected my own children. I didn't give them the love they deserved. I wasn't there for them when they needed me because I was too concerned with selling drugs or growing drugs or buying drugs or getting the drink or partying with my friends. And then I also chose drugs and alcohol over spending time with my own dad. The resentment grew so strong. I was so ashamed of him. I didn't want him around my family. And I judged him. Because hold on, man, you're sticking needles in your arm. Well, I don't do that. You're living on the streets. Well, that's never happened to me. Right? You're divorced. You don't have a career. That's never happened to me. You're a loser. Those are the attitudes and ideas I was giving to my own father. Totally bypassing the fact that I'm no better and I've done the same stuff. See, so this is going to take the sting out of it a little bit. This is going to allow me to move to this next portion of the inventory, which is our fourth column, right? And it says here, disregard the other person involved entirely. This is your inventory, not theirs. Where was I to blame before, during, and after? What did I do? And we're going to reference page 67, paragraph 2. Look at the things that I did to hold on to the resentment. Look at the things that I did to protect myself. How I look. Did I shun you? Did I gossip? Did I yell? Stay focused on what I've seen so far in column 1 through the realization as I write. Okay. So self-seeking, I'm going to look around the resentment. What did I do? Where was I to blame? My selfish actions or activities were that I've judged him my whole adult life. I've made myself out to be better than him, pushing him away from me and my family, isolating while proving to him I was better than him. So that's how I was self-seeking. Selfish. What was my selfish thinking while I was doing the above actions? You see, my selfish attitude was that I would never abandon my family. So I went out and had an affair. I abandoned my family. I left them. I lit a bomb off in my living room and left them to clean it up. I'll always be here for my sons. I will never let anything be more important than them. I've told myself he is a piece of shit, good for nothing, and that I don't need him. You see, remember, we're going to be specific. This is the attitude you have. This is what's going on in your mind here that created this action. So that thinking led me to judge him, let him know I'm better than him, took him away from my family, isolating from him, right? Because I had the idea that I would never do what he did. I'll always be here for my kids. I would never let anything be more important than them. I've told myself he's a piece of shit, good for nothing, and I don't need him. So now I'm going to look at the delusion, right? What was this lie that I was believing? What were the lies I was telling myself that resulted in the selfish thinking above? I was in the delusion that I don't need a father or anyone to depend on. There's that principle again, right? You notice that? There it is. There's the exact nature of all this. This fear of weakness and failure behind everything, every resentment I've ever had. I don't need love from a dad. I don't need help from him. I don't even want him around, right? I'm in a delusion that he wasn't even sick. So that's the delusion that's driving that attitude, that was driving the action, okay? And what are the fears that drove it all, right? I'm afraid of telling him how much I need a dad, how much I miss him, how much I was hurting. I was afraid of seeming weak and being vulnerable. Got all this fear, and I cannot show him that. Is driving this delusion that I don't need him. I don't need his love. I don't need his help. Is driving the attitude that I would never do what you did to me, and I would never act like that to anybody. Which is driving the action of judging you and pushing you away and keeping you from my family. And I'm going to prove to you that I'm better than you with words, with actions. I've said things to my father like, you're dead to me. You know, and he's gone now. This is real. This stuff hurts. But remember the realization at the top, right? What I've done. At the very bottom of this arm, this is going to help us with our immense process, right? I caused him so much harm by fueling his own guilt and validating that he was no good and a bad dad. I told him over and over and time again, how much of a bad father he was. Imagine the guilt and shame that man carried around, right? I robbed him of a son by not accepting him for who he was. I robbed myself of a father by not accepting him for who he was, right? The harm that we're going to put at the bottom of this is real. These are harms we're going to see when we go to an honest amends process. And the more of this stuff we can bring to light when we go to an amends process, the better. The more honest we can be, right? You know, Dad, I was in this delusion, man. Honestly, Dad, I'm just afraid of being vulnerable with you and telling you that I need you and that I have this sense of weakness and I'm so scared of failure. And man, I love you. I miss you. I'm hurting. I need you, right? And I had this idea that I don't need a dad. I don't need your love. I'm walking around with this in life. And I carried this attitude that I would never do what you did to me. Right? I would never be the father that you are. And for that, I apologize. And I apologize for judging and isolating myself and pushing you away from my family. And not accepting you for who you are and not understand that you suffer from the same illness that I do. And check this out, man. I'm no better than you because I did the same shit to my family. I abandoned my kids. I abandoned my wife. I put drugs and alcohol over everything in my life. I made it more important than anything. That's the power in this image. Right? Can we take this to our amends process? I can't without dismissing it first, or without releasing it. None of this is to be dismissed. This all needs to be released to God. And the biggest step in this is for me to put it on paper like this and to see some real truth in it, right? And I promise you, once you guys begin to do this wholeheartedly and thoroughly, you're going to see a lot of similarities. And that's good because we're not complex, even though we love complicated. We're really not. We're simple. We're scared. We're broken. That's it. And we're carrying around a shitload of guilt and shame and emptiness. We're looking for a connection. We're looking for some peace, right? And we had to get sober to see it. And that's where we are. So that's where we're going to stay. So that was an example of the third and the fourth column. We talked about the fourth column and the realization tonight. So you guys take that with you. to your writing this week, take that to your group. Please feel free to reach out to me if you want to sit down for an hour, if you want to talk, whatever you need to do. I'm here for you. I offer you my assistance for whatever that's worth. What we usually find out is we are very, very similar, all of us. None of us are special or different. So we just have some different circumstances. So yeah, that's what we're going to do. I'm going to say a prayer in this recording and then I'll hang around for you guys if you need it. So may the Lord bless you and protect you. May the Lord smile on you and be gracious to you. May the Lord show you his favor and give you his peace. Amen.